What is up, best life seekers? You are listening to Dreamcatcher, the podcast with your host, Mark Rudd Larson. Mark believes that at one time or another, we have all had dreams. Dreams for the future and dreams of a better life. In this podcast, Mark will feature people who have gone after, fought for, and caught their dreams. Mark and his guests will share the tips and tools that they've used to create their best lives. So sit back, listen, and learn so you too can get started catching all your dreams and living your best life. Now here's your host, Mark Rudd Larson.
Hello, Mark Rudd Larson here for the Dreamcatcher Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Today my guest is...
Shanaz Raji.
Thank you for joining us. And if you have watched the podcast or listened to the podcast lately or ever, you know I butchered your name. So thank you for saying your name and thank you for being our guest.
My absolute pleasure. Glad to be here.
So how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's a sunny day in Portugal, so no complaints.
Awesome. So are you from Portugal? Are you from Portugal originally?
No, not even close. I actually am born and raised in Switzerland, but I'm half Iranian, half Bolivian. And my husband and I relocated to Portugal in 2017. It's been a couple of years.
So the background, what got you to Portugal?
Well, I'll try to give you the short version of the answer to that. My husband and I met when we were in New York, and while we loved being in that city, we knew we had both grown up in Europe, and so we knew we wanted to come back to Europe eventually, and we knew we wanted to live closer to nature. And so when it was time for us to come back, we looked at Portugal and Spain, but when we visited, we really just fell in love with Portugal. It's really, you know, the weather is great, the people are friendly, the wine is delicious, the food, yeah, it is definitely, and property is affordable, which was important to us too. And so we bought an old farm that we're renovating into an ecotourism project, and so that's how we ended up in Portugal. We did a lot of volunteering along the way and fell in love with this particular region.
Very nice. So did you look at other countries besides Portugal before you located there?
Portugal and Spain that was our short list. We knew we wanted continental Europe. But I speak Spanish with my Bolivian side, I have the Spanish. So that would have been slightly easier. Okay. When we arrived, Portugal just stole our hearts. So it was a no brainer. We're still learning, but we learned Portuguese and ended up in this neck of the woods.
And from what I hear from my other friends that we talked about the other day in Lisbon, it sounds like Portuguese is, you get a workout learning their language, or, you know, it sounds somewhat challenging maybe. So what do you do? You have a farm. Do you raise a lot of things, or what do you do on your farm?
So that's a good question. It's more of a hobby farm. So we have a vegetable garden, we have cats, dogs, donkeys. And then depending on the time of year you ask the question, we will have chickens or not. We've had free range chickens and ducks, in the past. Although right now we have three chickens again, but anyway, it's intended, more as a way for us to live closer to nature. So the vegetable garden is, I mean, it's not like we can live off it. My starting point is I kill cactuses. So it's taken a while for me to learn how to grow things. Yeah. And, we aspire to be as sustainable as possible. But really, we're completely off grid, and ultimately we hope to open an ecotourism project. So being able to share the space, so people can come and be closer to nature and reconnect. And hopefully, run some different workshops and stuff. I mean, that's a longer term thing.
The farm piece. So what is your dream? What does the dream look like for your ecotourism thing?
So ideally, what we're hoping is that eventually we'll be able to sleep about 15 people in three or four different units.
Okay.
Each unit with its own sort of kitchenette and bathroom, so people can be a little bit independent if they want to. And then at the main, there are two sort of bigger houses in the main, at the heart of the property, let's say. And so that's where we would have breakfasts, and we would probably have a couple meals a week. And the place is really beautiful. It has incredible views of the Serra da Estrela Mountains. It's an area that's known for their night sky. So there's no night pollution, right? There's no light pollution or anything like that. So it's really,
so beautiful.
It's gorgeous. And so hopefully we would have a setup where probably in the summer, it would be just people that are coming for, you know, a long weekend or a week or two on holidays. Sure. And then the rest of the year, hopefully we would have some workshops. So have people coming through who want to learn about, you know, writing, coaching, negotiation, whatever, you know, whatever we can, we'll work with other people to have an offering. And then what we're hoping is to make the place into what we call an edible landscape, so that you have, you know, fruit trees that are producing year round, right? One way or the other. So anytime that you come and are walking around, you can basically feed off of or snack at least off what is available from nature, just as a way to be closer to that. Yeah, I mean, and when you get into it, it's amazing. You know, like, I mean, there are so many things. The things that I did not know before moving onto a farm could fill multiple books and do. But, you know, for example, oranges and lemons and kiwis are actually their end of year fruit, right? They're winter fruit. Which I didn't know, but it makes sense because they give you the boost of vitamin C that you need to usually make it through the winter with healthier. So that's what we mean when we say an edible landscape, is that you have, there's always something available from nature. And so we're planting trees and we're setting it up so that that's our goal.
That's a very good goal. I mean, so, okay, have mountains. It must be like a valley there where you're at so you can grow this. Okay.
So we're a little higher. We're not in the down in the valley. We're like our place is actually like a mini valley within a broader valley. It's pretty gorgeous.
So do you get cold weather?
We do. We actually get seasons, which not everybody loves.
But you do get seasons. Okay.
We do get seasons. So in winter, I mean, it doesn't get too cold, but it'll get to like negative. So I work in centigrade, obviously. So it's negative five in at night. And we do usually get a bit of snow.
Just a little below freezing.
Exactly. Okay. And then in the summer it goes up. Usually we'll be in the like balmy, like 25, 35 range for the summer, with maybe a couple days at 40, which is really hot. But what's nice is that because we have a little bit of altitude where we are, so even on the really hot days in summer, it'll get cool at night. It'll drop back down.
I would love where you're at.
Yeah. Well, oh my gosh. I hope you come visit. That would be great.
I definitely, we're planning on visiting. I mean, my gosh, with the other day when we talked, and now even more. So okay, you said you're off the grid. How was that easy to do? Or is that easy to do?
I mean, easy is a relative term, I guess. When we were looking at properties, we decided that we wanted to find the right place, irrespective of what the setup was. So in the sense that we were like, if there's no house, we'll build a house. If there's a house, we'll fix it up. I mean, we wanted to make sure that the land was the right one for us. And so when we found this place, it had three ruins. And it was completely off grid. So it's not connected at all to anything, right? So what that means, when we arrived, we got what we call a shepherd's hut, which is like a fancy, it's a tiny house, right? It's 12 square meters, which is really small. We literally got a truck that just delivered it and just like plopped it in like, you know, this one specific space. And that was it. Like there was nothing there.
It's just there. Yeah.
It's just there, but there was no running water. There was no, and so slowly over time, my husband is a watchmaker by training, which means he's good with his hands and he's good at reverse engineering, which is a lifesaver because if you depended on me for all this, we'd probably still be struggling. But so we have, there are a lot of, there are quite a few natural springs on the property. And there were a couple of spots that were very wet when we arrived, and there were pipes coming out of the walls or out. So we knew that there was a lot of water. And so one of the first things we did is we had water reservoirs built, and then my husband basically set it up, you know, like got a machine, dug trenches, set up the pipes. I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling when you think about it, but everything is gravity fed. So all of like the springs that we use for the water are higher up in the property than the houses. And so everything now has been, you know, has been piped and now everything, exactly runs, based on gravity. And then in terms of electricity, we have solar panels, right? So we have a whole system. Okay. We started off with a smaller system that just was for the tiny house. So a couple batteries and solar panels. And then we recently upgraded to, now that we have some of the ruins renovated and we have more roof space, we've set up like a bigger system of solar panels and batteries so that we have the way that my husband calculated it is that there's enough. So even if we have a couple of days of really bad weather and no sunshine, we have enough for about 3 days. which in Portugal is pretty good. Exactly. It's quite nice. And then beyond that, we do have a generator just in case, as sort of a backup source.
Good to have
a backup. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, if you have natural springs, do you have, have spas with the natural spring water, or is that ever in the...
there are actually quite a lot of thermal baths in the region.
Are there?
Have different levels of comfort and rusticness. Where we are, it sounds very romantic. The water is really cold. So I think if we use the water for anything, it would probably be more using some of our reservoirs for, there's this whole trend of like ice baths and like
breathing, right?
That would be more, I think, what we could, exactly, that we can cater to year round. So who knows? Maybe that'll be part of it.
Oh my gosh. Okay, you said, do you like to cook with all those fresh ingredients there? Do you cook or do you like to cook?
We do. My husband and I are both, we both love food. So we definitely cook and we've actually, we cook more since we've moved to Portugal. We cooked a decent amount, even in New York City, actually. But, one of the things that we realized, in rural Portugal, as much as it has a lot to offer, diversity in food options is not at the top of the list, right? So there are a couple. It's gotten better in the past few years. There are a couple sushi places, and there's like an Indian place, which is mind-boggling for rural Portugal. But for the most part, it's been a good incentive for us to dive a little bit more into cooking sort of Asian-inspired food or curries and things like that. So yeah, we do that a lot at home.
Curries are so good. That's one of my favorite things, a good curry. So so I know we talked the other day, you said you crossed the valley or something, because I talked to people in Portugal about their fresh baked breads and stuff like that. Do you make any breads?
So we don't, during COVID, we my husband and I both thought maybe we'll start finally a sourdough starter and start getting into that trend. But we never really did, and part of that is that there are there's a mountain village just across from us, which is, it's like a 10-minute drive, but visually it's just across the valley, and they're known for their for their bread. So every year they have a bread festival, and they have most small villages. most small villages around here actually have communal bread ovens, but they have multiple ones. Yeah. And so, because traditionally they would fire them up once a week, and then you could, everybody could sort of have their turn, and it was like just a communal effort, so you didn't have to have all
the
resources.
Awesome. I love that.
It's pretty clever. And so, the place across, that one has multiple communal bread ovens, so you could actually order bread if you want, and then that one time a year, of course, it's like a ode to bread. And I have to say that's some of the best bread I've ever had. The bread, it's understandable.
I'd be eating bread all the time.
We're also in the region known for sheep and wool production and cheese. It's not, it's there's not a huge amount of diversity in terms of the types of cheese that are produced, but the cheese is pretty good.
That's also another nice. One. That's right up with bread. And you said wine already, so we got
exactly
got me, right.
That's the trifecta.
So okay, when you got there, was that what you thought that area like Portugal would be like? Was it as a big surprise or?
Yes and no. I mean, we knew we were going to be in sort of a rustic area, right? We knew we were coming to rural Portugal. I mean, that was no surprise, but we've discovered a lot of things along the way, right? Because I actually, when we first visited Portugal, that's when I discovered that there were great wines. I didn't actually know before that. And then, the specificity of this region being like a wool producing region and having sheep and all we didn't really know. I mean, we didn't factor that in. It was just kind of like good surprises that we discovered.
Yeah, that is a very good surprise. Yeah. So, I mean, they make clothing there that you can buy or do they?
They do. I mean, there are a couple, they're about 45-minute drive from us. There are two of the main, I would say, two of the big wool factories that exist. You can visit them. It's quite a cool visit. It's a little less than an hour. And it's fascinating because they have these really old machines and they have all the way to the newer ones. And so you can kind of see the evolution of the trade. And they do a lot of different productions. One of them is known for what they call burel, which is wool, but it's treated. It's a bit like felt. It's treated so that it's actually, it's like waterproof. So they make, and they make also, I mean, both of the factories make, they make clothes, they make shoes, they make, you know, blankets, they make all sorts of things out of wool. And so you can find, you know, there are a number of shops all around that you can, buy all that from. So it's, it's pretty nice.
So neat. I mean, that just, I can't wait to visit your area. I mean, that just, so how do you get into your area? Do you fly into Lisbon or what's your nearest airport, or do you have a big city that you can fly into?
That's a good question. So we're a 3.5-hour drive from Lisbon. Porto is a little bit closer. Porto is just over a 2-hour drive. Typically typically when we have the choice, we fly into Porto because it's just a little bit closer. It's a relatively easy drive. I mean, Portugal is a easy country to get around. There are a lot of bus routes and there are a lot of trains.
Oh, really?
So even if you don't want to rent a car, you can actually get around relatively easily.
Mm-hmm. That's good to know too. I like that. I wish the United States had more train networks. Like, you know, what we found in Italy when we were talking the other day, when Cheryl and I were there last. I mean, it's why we don't, well, we all have to have our cars here in the United States. So, I mean, maybe that's it. I mean, just on that. So,
well, the distances are very different.
True. That is true too. It's a long distance from one, even just one state to the other end. So, so you said you lived in New York. What were you doing in New York?
In New York, I was working for a company that focused on health, actually on health promotion. Okay. And how to use behavioral science to encourage people to be healthy. The whole logic was, the way we're wired, we want immediate returns, right? So investing in your health is something that's not easy for us humans because you have to eat healthy now so that you are healthy later. And so this company was really looking at how do you change that, right? How do you use everything we know about behavior and psychology to encourage people to be healthy today so that, you know, we can benefit from that later. It was really interesting. And I've always been on the communication side of things. So that was my role in that, that context too.
So how did you get people to realize that? Because most people, you know, they say health is wealth and everything, but it's like, yeah, it's a nice idea. But, you know, kind of like when diets started at the beginning of the year, it's like with the,
it doesn't last.
I love that. But it doesn't last. Did you have a way to get people to realize that and just to keep continually taking action towards that?
So there are a couple of things that work. It's really, I mean, it's a whole science, right? But for example, one of the systems that this company set up was a bit like, it's like a loyalty program, but it's linked to health. So for example, you got a Fitbit that you connected to the program, and if you walked a certain number of steps every day, you would get points. If you got your physical done every year, if you did, you know, there are all sorts of little things that you could do that would get you points.
Okay.
And then, so this company catered to other companies. And so then you could set it up differently. But for example, some companies decided to link the points to like Amazon gift cards. So you had a very real, tangible return.
Exactly.
And then as they continued to do research, they realized that one of the issues is that if you have if every time you do something, you get a specific reward, the benefits of that reward kind of trail off. So it becomes less exciting to get that reward because you expect it. And so they also added in an element where you could get points and build up, and then it would translate to you being part of a raffle. And being part of a raffle triggers a whole other part of your brain because you don't know if you're going to win, right? There's that element of chance.
Right, right.
And so that keeps it exciting.
It does.
Because
I like
keeps
that.
You on your toes. Yeah. So there's, I mean, those are just a couple of the things, but it was fascinating because it went from everything from sort of general health. And then the company also took specific measures to, you know, around sort of tobacco control and helping people quit smoking, which is kind of a whole other beast. It was really fascinating because it was really just learning about behavioral psychology and you know, there's so much there in terms of how systems are set up and how you can encourage people to either be healthy or not be healthy.
It would have been very interesting. Very interesting. So did you like New York?
Oh, I love New York. I mean, I was there for 3 years, and it felt like a honeymoon from A to Z. You know, it was really New York is just
That's
one of those
cool.
cities. I mean, the food is amazing. There's the diversity of people. I feel like New York is one of those places. Like anything you're interested in or want to learn is at your fingertips. Right. So that I loved. Yeah. I did a little bit of tap dancing. I did a little bit of. I did like a trapeze class. so random, but it was really fun. And so it was really, it was an amazing couple of years. I have to say it was really, really enjoyable.
So what was the impetus to leave New York then, if I may ask?
Well, so my husband and I, we knew it wasn't going to be long-term because of a visa question, okay. Right? Like we had a 3-year work visa, and then we knew that after that, either we sort of went down the route of trying to get a green card and really sort of setting up our lives in the U.S. or not. And given that both of us, I mean, I have family kind of everywhere coming from my background, but my husband's family is really focused in Europe, in Belgium, primarily in the Netherlands.
Okay, yeah.
And so we knew we wanted to come back to Europe. And so that
makes sense.
Yeah.
I know you've worked for, or maybe still do, the United Nations. Mm-hmm. You still do?
I've worked for the United Nations on and off, and right now I'm working with a team that's part of two United Nations agencies, the UN Office of Coordination for the Humanitarian Affairs and UN Development Program. And it's a team that focuses on disaster management and specifically how to work with local businesses on that. So it's fascinating. It's really, unfortunately, we have a lot of work and that doesn't seem to be going to change anytime soon. But it's a really interesting question. I mean, we're linked to two agencies because there's one agency that's the agency where, you know, for example, last year when there were the earthquakes in Turkey, and there was, you know, there's a huge influx of people who want to help and agencies and organizations. And so the OCHA, which is the nickname for the organization, they're the ones who get in there and they do the coordination, right? They help make sure that everyone is working together, that the right people are talking to each other, that they're working with the government, just to avoid redundancy and duplication of efforts. And then other agency that we work with, which is the UN Development Program, they're more focused on sort of recovery and what does that look like. So how do you make sure that, you know, communities either prepare for, but also go all the way through to sort of recovering from disasters in a way that makes them more resilient ultimately. And so we're kind of in the middle of that. And our logic is, you know, local businesses are there, right? They're on the front lines and they're going to be affected and want to help and want to mobilize no matter what. And so they may as well be part of the system and part of the efforts to make it more impactful.
So if somebody was interested in working with the United Nations, or how did you get started with them? Or how did you know you wanted to do that?
I didn't know I wanted to do that. growing up in Geneva in Switzerland, was a good starting point in the sense that there, you know, the UN headquarters are there. There are a lot of different UN agencies that are based there.
True.
And so growing up, that was part of the context, right? I had a lot of friends who worked for the UN. My parents worked for the UN.
That makes sense.
When I finished university, I got an internship, at one of the UN agencies in Switzerland. And it was made easier. I mean, it was an unpaid internship initially. And so it was made easier by the fact that I had, you know, I could stay with my parents and it didn't have a lot of overheads. But, you know, if people are interested in working for the UN, there are always openings. So it's a question of looking at online and depending, you know, it depends also what kind of jobs you want, right? The sort of headquarter jobs are harder to get. There are always a lot of field positions that are opening up. And then it's just a matter of, it helps to have languages, French, English, Spanish. Russian, Chinese, Arabic, the main sort of UN languages. Having even one or two of those is a huge asset. But beyond that, it's mostly just being curious and interested and working towards it, you know, like anything.
So awesome. So you talk about growing up in Switzerland. So Switzerland, I've never been there. I've seen awesome pictures and heard about Switzerland. Is Switzerland kind of that way from your view of growing up there?
I mean, I guess the reputation Switzerland has is founded on, you know, reality to some extent. I mean, it's a beautiful country. Mm-hmm. It's very well organized. Uh-huh. It's very structured. The mountains are gorgeous, you know, and it's true that the lifestyle is pretty high, right? It's a pretty good life. Mm-hmm. People tend to the cost of living is high, but you make good money as well. So, in that sense, I guess, Switzerland does live up to its reputation. And the chocolate is delicious and the cheese is amazing.
Swiss chocolate. Yes. That's another one. Yes. Oh yes. So, with winter being there, do you do winter sports or do you ski or do any of those things?
Ski, did snowboard, okay. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, it's I would be exaggerating if I said it's impossible not to, but it's really at your fingertips. And that's some of the things, you know, that people who come to Switzerland fall in love with it because you have so much right there, right? The mountains are, you know, from Geneva, for example, and even from Zurich, you're like, it's like an hour drive and you have so many choices of gorgeous mountains, whether it's for hiking or for skiing or snowboarding or whatever. But you also have a lot of lakes. So you have a lot of water sports. So it's it's an easy place to be outdoors and to have
special. Between skiing and snowboarding, which one's your favorite one? I've looked into snowboarding and never skied. So, or is there any difference?
There definitely. So I skied because that was, I guess.
Right.
More the norm, the default, let's say. And as soon as I could, I switched to snowboarding for a very specific reason, which is I hated the ski boots and I hated having to carry the skis and the poles. I was just like, and snowboarding for me if nothing else, it felt like I was wearing slippers and I just had one board to carry instead of I sort of went into snowboarding for a long time and really, really loved it. But it's true that when you snowboard, you spend more time on your bum and with bruised knees.
That would be me.
Believe it or not, you can ski in Portugal and the ski.
Really? Station, I was just going to ask you that.
There is skiing and it's about a 45 minute, an hour drive from us. And,
That's good.
It's a very, it's very basic compared to Switzerland, which of course is not really fair because Switzerland is like some of the best skiing in the world. I will say that when we went back recently, I skied because I think I feel like snowboarding is great when you're like between the ages, up until you're in your 30s, 40s, depends how fit you are. But it definitely feels a little easier to go back to skiing now. I guess it all depends on how flexible you are, how athletic you are, what your preference is.
I'm gonna make a note of that. Very much a note of that. So changing directions. You are an author. So what got you started on writing a book? And what is the name of your book before we start?
I just published my first young adult fantasy book called Flight of an Orphan Thief. And it's a book that I, in some ways, had never expected to write. When I first got to Portugal, with my husband, we took time off. So we were volunteering. So we had more time available than usual, right? There was no full-time job to eat up those daytime hours. And I found out about this challenge called the National Novel Writing Month, or NaNoWriMo, which started in the US, but it's a worldwide phenomenon at this point. And the idea, it's every November. And the idea is to write 50,000 words in 30 days. And so I was in Portugal. I had access to Wi-Fi. I had my computer. I had time. And I thought,
perfect.
Well, I'm a sucker for challenges. So if not now, then
why not? Yeah.
And so I probably decided about a week ahead before that I was going to try and do this. And so then, of course, I started thinking about what am I going to write? Like what? It's not like I had a story in my mind. You know, some authors have these stories that live in their minds for years and then finally they put them down on paper. And as I didn't have that, I wasn't sure where to start. And I decided, so growing up, I have an older brother who used to play Dungeons and Dragons. And I used to sit at the table and just listen rapt, about all these adventures and characters and incredible things happening. And so eventually I wore my brother down and he accepted to have me join the crew. And so I played for a couple of years before going off to university. And so I decided to write the backstory of one of my favorite Dungeons and Dragons characters. It's in a world of my own creation, but it is inspired by, this character. And so that made it easier because a character that I was quite, familiar with, right? Because I'd sort of played this character and been, that's kind of how the story came about, how the book came about. And then as many authors will probably tell you, then it was just a matter of just kind of hanging on for the ride because I had a couple of ideas on what the story would be, but then my character kind of did her own thing. I just tried to follow.
That's kind of, we're leading you. So I think that's awesome. So, And I actually, you have where you can read the first two chapters, but where can people find your book if they want to buy your book?
So Amazon. That is the easy answer. Okay. And it's available as an ebook and as a paperback. And okay. It's, as you mentioned, if you sign up to my newsletter, you get the first two chapters for free. And then if you want, otherwise, good. Yeah, Amazon is, thank you. Amazon is the place to go. It's been, you know, it's been a fascinating journey. I self-published. And so it's been, okay. I mean, I think any journey into the writing world and the publishing world is probably a roller coaster, but, it's been really interesting to dive into that also and to discover a whole new universe of,
Bet.
Yeah.
So was that what you thought it might be like to self-publish?
I mean, so when I first wrote this, the first draft of this book, when I did NaNoWriMo, that was 2017. So that was years and years and years ago. Okay. And then I sort of, you know, I shared it with one or two people. I did a little bit of editing and I reworked it, but it was a slow burn, right? It was something I was doing on the side when I wasn't doing other things.
Right.
And eventually I decided that I continued writing and I took on other projects in the meantime. I did NaNoWriMo almost every year since then. And eventually I thought, well, I really want to get my first book out into the world. And so I started looking at, you know, how to do it. You know, what does it look like if you get an agent, if you then get it, you know, get a publisher, et cetera, and versus the indie publishing world and self-publishing. And my conclusion was that what worked for me, what made sense for me was to do it myself because there are exceptions, of course, but most of the time, the overnight successes that you hear about, right, these authors that do so well, they've been at it for 10, 15, 20 years, right? They've taken forever.
Yeah.
It's taken forever for them to find an agent. It's taken forever for that agent to sell their story. It's taken more time still for that book, for the first book to come out. And often they're, you know, 5, 10, 15 books in before most people hear about them. And that's incredible. And I have a huge amount of respect for that. Nowadays there's what I've understood is that even if you have that kind of support and you're not doing all the work yourself, it still comes down to the author to do a lot of the marketing and a lot of the dissemination and distribution and you know, figuring it out. And so as a result, I thought, well, this is not something that I aspire to do full time. It's something that I really enjoy doing and I'm planning to continue doing. Taking on that task of taking years to find the right agent to work with and taking years to find the right publisher, it really didn't appeal to me. And so I thought I like learning how to do things. I like learning. And so I thought I'm going to do this. I'm going to put money in. So I wanted to, you know, I hired a professional editor. I hired a cover designer, you know, like I was like, I don't want to necessarily like bootstrap it, but I want to do it myself. And I want to, because my goal is again, right now, and some people do it full time and self-publish, and that's also amazing in many ways.
Uh-huh.
But for me, it made more sense that way. I really enjoy, you know, the cover design. Like I really enjoyed being part of that process of being able to decide what the end product is. And you lose a lot of that if you
true
outsource, right?
To publisher. And you know how all that goes into doing that too, then after you do that. So that's a win-win for sure. So you have how many more books in you?
Oh, well, I don't know. hopefully it's not a finite number, but I do already have the book two drafted of the series. I've started working on a memoir. Because I think a lot of I've talked to a lot of people who, when they hear about our journey to rural Portugal, are fascinated and say that they wish they could do, of course, not the same thing, but like, you know, it's how do you take sort of what is the common rat race everyday life and turn it into a life that you love. And that's something that I'm actually very passionate about helping people figure that out, because I think it's as long as you are happy with where you are, then, you know, great. If you have a 9-to-5 job or a 9-to-9 job or whatever it is, then great. But I think a lot of people end up in places kind of by default. And I think that that's a shame, because I think that it's an incredible world that we live in and there are so many possibilities. And so I'm hoping that at some point getting a memoir down will be one way to share my story in a way that inspires others to explore what they want their story to look like and sort of take the steps to live that out.
That is so awesome. And I agree with you. I would guess that's why one reason why I started the Dreamcatcher, because most people, they want to do what you've done or something, you know, like that, but they go to default And it's just like, oh, that's for somebody else. Or, you know, I'm too old or don't have enough. There's always reasons. It's like, you just got to make the decision. You're going to do it. Because the first step, like they would say, the first step is. And it's very scary. But you just do it. And there's going to be ups and downs. Anything worthwhile is going to be challenging.
Exactly. That's true. But, you know, I've had people say, like, oh, I couldn't do what you wanted. And I'm like, well, you know, sometimes friends say that to me. And I'm like, well, I know for a fact that you're better at managing finances than I am. So it's clearly not, do you know what I mean? Like, if that's your excuse, then, right. You know, think about it. And sometimes it's also because people haven't tried to step a bit out of the system. Mm-hmm. Right. So like, I know I have friends living in Switzerland and, you know, if they think of it, they're like, oh, but it must be so complicated because you have to pay for insurance and, you know, and rent and all these things. Yeah. And it's like, well, yes, that's true. But if you're in a different country, you know, if your dream is to live in Latin America, like it's a completely different setup.
Yeah.
The costs are different, you know? So I think that and often there are little things that you can do, as you were saying, like those first steps, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't start by you like walking away from everything and starting from scratch.
No, I wouldn't recommend that either.
No, exactly. you can learn about things. You can go on, you know, you can take courses, you can volunteer, there's so many ways to break down what seems like a out of reach dream into specific things that you can do. And it might evolve along the way, right? You might realize that actually, you know, I mean, what we didn't touch on this yet, but when we left New York with my husband, we actually traveled for a year and we volunteered on farms because we thought, well, it's, you know, when you're in New York and you're working in a corporate job, it's pretty, well, not for everyone, but it might be easy to think, oh, the romance of like living on a farm and being in nature is wonderful. Right. And then when you get there, what if you hate it? You know, what if you bought a farm and then you realize it's not for you?
Possibility, yeah.
And so we were lucky enough that we decided to take a belated honeymoon and travel for a while and volunteer on farms. So it allowed us to really test whether we enjoy doing it, whether we enjoy doing it together and learn, right, from people that have been doing it for a while. And so I think that there's, you know, obviously, you know, we did it. We took the fact that our work visas were coming to an end to really, we traveled for a year, but you don't have to, right? You could do it. You know, if you have a week off a year, you could use that to explore. I mean, so there's so just many different ways exactly to just test the waters and get started. Yeah. And so I think that that's something people need to hear, is the alternative stories.
I do too. I think it is. And the nice thing is, I mean, I could have not started podcasting over 3 years ago because I had my own business and, you know, everything was going well, but then I decided to, you know, just basically end that and do this. And it's like, there are times it's like, yeah, that would have been better if I just stayed there, but then I wouldn't be talking to you. You know, I wouldn't be actually talking to anybody I've done on the podcast or anything this whole journey has been. And the nice thing is there's so many, with today's world, there's so many other people that are there to kind of as support. It's just like, you know, other podcasters or, you know, there's always somebody else out right now. And with the internet, we're able to talk to them. Whereas,
exactly.
It's just like, so how did you figure that out? Or how did you do that? Or so that part, I think, helps somewhat. It's still intimidating, but
it's
traveling.
Anything worthwhile, right, is going to be. And
it is.
Somebody smarter than me said life begins at the edge of your comfort zone. Right. And now I think sometimes it's fine to stay in your comfort zone by all means, but to just test that. If nothing else, go beyond it. And then come back to your comfort zone, right? And you'll appreciate it all the more so because you know why you're there.
You will.
And that's also something that I feel like, I mean, there are some people I know that they're actually very happy in their sort of corporate jobs and living in a city, right? And that's fine.
Yep.
But it feels like they know that. And so they appreciate what they have versus other people that tend to complain because they're not quite happy, but they're also not doing anything about it. And so I think giving people like that examples of what they could be doing on the side or extra or whatever or differently, I just think it's really important. Life is too short
so
to be and work. You work for a lot of hours, right? So it's kind of like lot of time to be miserable.
And life is very short. I mean, I used to work for a lady, and she died at 90. She was in her 90s, and she always would say, "It's Friday again." It's like, another week's gone by. And it's like, I never thought of it that way. But, and she did quite well all her whole life. But it's just like, you know, look at how far we already are to 2024.
I mean
exactly. It's just amazing how
it is.
Time goes by.
And time accelerates.
And you need to do it now. So, it does. Well, let me tell you, it accelerates. You know, as a kid, I wanted to speed up. It's like, nope, now slow it down. Let's slow her down. So,
exactly.
No, that's why I want people to, I hope I inspire people with what, you know, featuring people like you, and then with what I'm doing on the podcast, it's just like, you know, it's all possible. You got to believe it's possible, but yes, it is. And it's just, it's so awesome. And like you say, there are people that are comfortable with doing the other, you know, that's good for them. But I have so many people, it's like, well, how did you do that? That's not for me, you know? And it's like, it could be.
Or they say they don't know where to start, you know, which is fair.
Yeah.
But that's not a reason not to start. Right. I mean, and this is something I've been lucky, you know. I mean, it's also because I tend to be a little bit shameless in how I approach life. But I remember one of the first internship I did at the UN, at one point, they were like, oh, so we're hiring someone who's going to run International Women's Day for us, among other things.
Oh, wow.
And so you'll work with her, you know, when she's on board. And I said, great. And they said, well, until she's on board, you can already get started. And as luck would have it, the administrative side of things went so slowly that I basically organized all of Women's Day, and they ended up hiring a woman who came on. She ended up coming on board, I think it was the week before Women's Day. So by then everything was cooked, right? It was all done. And I got this, wow. You know, I was an intern. Like normally I would never have had that level of responsibility.
True.
And the theme that they had already chosen was female film directors. Now, I love going to the movies, but I knew nothing about female film directors. And this was at the International Labor Organization. So they also wanted to tie in with, you know, some of the bigger picture issues that they dealt with. And I ended up organizing a film festival for that, you know, a free film festival in Geneva for a week. And I had a panel with a female film director that came in from Paris. And, you know, I don't even know if you ask me now, like, how did you do that? I'm like, I just started researching. I just started Googling stuff and like asking questions reading up and like, exactly. And, you know, one friend who came to the film festival was like, how did you even know how to get like the physical, right? Because you could probably do it all digitally, but there I actually reached out to production houses that sent me the actual reels for the movies. And I was like, I just started calling people and asking questions and, you know, and it just kind of worked out. And so that's the kind of experience that also helps. I think once you've done anything like that once, right, then you realize you can do it again and you can apply it across the board, right? Those are the kind of skills that I've luckily been accumulating over my life, is like the across the board ones, right? Like I have a huge amount of respect for people who have PhDs and dive in one topic and they go really deep. I'm the opposite. I'm like, let me do this across the board.
That's me. I would rather do what you, you know, that's just me. And I mean, and that's how you, I mean, you learn by fire or whatever that saying is, but you do, you learn really, really fast. So, but you learn.
Yeah,
and,
you do.
I kind of find that exhilarating, you know, it's just like, it's just like, this is so exciting. I can't wait to see what's going to go on today, you know? And it's just like, yeah, I would have to be always that way. I would not be in an office setting or any of that, you know, more structured. That's why I like to celebrate every day. That's why I like to travel, you know, and that's another thing people say. It's like when you're talking about traveling, people are just like, they're intimidated, you know, by that. And it's like, you know, it really is not that hard. You know, it isn't. I mean, of course, I mean, it can be that hard in the United States. I mean, you might get a TSA line that seems like a few kilometers long, you know, or miles, but and then some. Or like when we got into Italy, into Denver last fall or last summer, they had like 5 international planes come at the same time.
Uh-huh.
Oh my gosh, we were there for hours.
Yes,
and it's just it's just like you just do it, you know, you're just part of it, and it's like I've never done this before. We had lots of time to think about it.
It's like anything. It's like any muscle that you're not used to using, right? It's gonna be a struggle. It's gonna be strange. I remember when I started learning how to drive, and I remember thinking, there's so many things to do at the same time. Like I was like, how? And then I was like, well, people do this all the time, right? And people learn how to drive. Yep. And I was like, and I see people who drive and they listen to the radio and they're having a conversation. And I, at the beginning, I was like, I can't listen to the radio. Nobody can talk to me. I need to really focus. And even then, you work the muscles and the real muscles and the proverbial ones, and then you learn and you adapt, and then you realize that you can have a conversation while listening to the radio while driving safely. Like it's actually okay. And so it's
and
it's
you look
all...
back and it's like, how come I couldn't do that to begin with? Yeah. So,
but you know, it's yeah, it's really. I think it's some people have harder experiences. I think when they're younger, that sort of teach them to stay safe, right, and to sort of not try new things, and that's probably much harder to break out of than you know. In my case, I've been lucky that I've been in a very supportive environment for most of my life. Not to say that there were no challenges, but you know, the baseline was always.
We all have our challenges. No, I've been very blessed. But yeah, some challenges, it's like, okay, I think I've had enough challenges for a little while here. So, but it's just, if we only had that decision that we, or that choice, So, anything else that you'd like to share with the audience today?
Probably a lot more, but I think we covered quite a lot already. I think, I guess, to close, I mean, it's kind of reiterating everything, but I really hope that by sharing different elements of my story, that people realize that it's they can write their own story too, whether literally in terms of writing and sharing or just in terms of the decisions they make and the lives that they lead. And for what it's worth, if any of the listeners are aspiring authors or people who want to write, or do any of the other things that I've done in my life, please reach out. I'm happy to help in any way I can, whether it's just brainstorming or talking through things or, you know, sharing resources or things that I've learned in case they can, it avoids somebody else starting at zero. Happy to do that.
That's awesome. I love that. That's the way I wish the world were. I wish the world were more like that. Yes. The world... We're working towards that.
Exactly. I was going to say, we can do what we can do, right? We can start in our little corner.
Sure. So, but well, on that, I'm going to end the podcast and thanks for joining us today. And I look forward to keeping in touch. I look forward to Cheryl and I coming over and visiting.
I was going to say, please come visit. That would be lovely.
Oh, yes. That's definitely, I'm not even putting that is on the short list.
Excellent. So, and then we can do a live podcast out in nature or something.
Okay. I will make a note of that. That talk about a win-win. That sounds really good. So I will definitely look forward to that. And thank you for joining us today. And have a good rest of your day. And we'll talk soon.
That sounds great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.